AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
What is up, everybody? I'm George Massey. Welcome, everyone, to the George Massey Show. This is the Pop Culture Podcast. I am here with my bestie, Gina. Everyone say hi to Gina, please. Hi, Gina.
Hi.
So we have a lot to talk about. There's a lot of crazy, weird stuff going on in the news. And oh, I wanted to bring up, because we're on a podcast right now, I don't know if you listen to podcasts outside of our podcast, but Taylor Swift's boyfriend, I think his name is Travis. I could be wrong. I think his name is Travis Kelce. He has a podcast, and Taylor Swift was a guest on his podcast, which I wish I had a girlfriend like Taylor Swift to be on my podcast. But okay, so she announced that she's releasing a new album, which I think is like her 12th studio album. And I just wanted to get your opinion, because I know you're a boy band girl. So I was wondering, are you a Swiftie? Are you excited for this? Do you not care? Like, where do you land on this Taylor Swift stuff?
I'm like on the fence, just because like I liked her older stuff, like not so much her new stuff at this time. Like that's more of my like little cousin's like genre, and it was a big like. Like her last tour was a huge hoopla everywhere. And ticket prices were atrociously priced. Hotel prices, same thing. It was like gouging, right? For like not everybody who wanted to go could get tickets.
Yeah, I heard that.
And then you had to like pay like crazy prices for good tickets.
Well, so I have to agree with you, though. You said I like her new or her old stuff over her new stuff. That is true. I do like the old Taylor Swift stuff. I'm still a Teardrops on My Guitar guy. Like, I still like her really old stuff when she was first coming out. But I do like I Knew You Were Trouble When You Walked In. Like, she did put out some good stuff in the middle. I mean, I don't think that she's putting out terrible music. I'm not going to sit here and say that, but I'm not like a Swiftie, you know, like I've seen Taylor Swift in concert. I've actually met Taylor Swift in person before. She's a very sweet person. Well, when I met her, she was a very sweet person. Do you remember when she did the MTV Video Music Awards and Kanye West wouldn't let her accept her award?
Yep.
I met her that day, earlier in the day. I actually attended those MTV Video Music Awards that year in person. I was there in the building. And during the day, I don't know if you remember, but Taylor performed You Belong With Me on the rooftop, or not the roof, because it's New York, but on the, you know, where it says Radio City Music Hall, and there's like a roof. She performed right up there. And during the day, we were in and out of the Radio City doing things. And on my way out of Radio City, one of the times, Taylor Swift was on her way off of the roof and we were walking together going along the side of the building. Super sweet, super nice. And it's just really ironic because while we were walking alongside the Radio City, somebody walked past her, like going in the opposite direction that we were walking. And they were like, who are you? You were performing on the thing. Who are you? And she was like, oh, my name is Taylor Swift. And I have an album. Da, da, da. And they were like, I've never heard of you. And I just think it's so ironic because that moment like lives in my head, because now no one would ever ask Taylor Swift, who are you? And no one would ever say, I've never heard of you. And it's so funny because when they said that, she was like, oh, well, maybe hopefully one day you will. And that it just plays over and over in my head, because now I bet you that person does know exactly who she is. And they probably wish they were a little more polite to her, because that was, I mean, I found it to be a little rude, but she handled it like a champ. She was very kind and sweet, and she didn't react, right? Like she never broke her Southern sweetheart character in that moment. But I was just like, damn, people act like they don't know who she is. I was like, even then, she was popular enough because she won the award over Beyonce. So she was still
Yeah.
somebody, but you know, she's definitely not the person that she became now. But yeah, so her new album, I think it's her 12th studio album, which is crazy. Can you imagine 12 albums? To put it in perspective, Whitney Houston only had 10 albums in her career. So Taylor Swift is now going to be two albums past Whitney Houston. And Whitney Houston had hit on hit on hit on hit on hit. And she had like a massive career spanning decades and decades. So Taylor Swift is now entering that territory of a legendary person. Do you agree with that, or do you feel like maybe not?
I think she's touched on a lot of like adults like her, like older women like her, kids like her. So she's touched every generation gap.
I
Right?
feel like,
So
yeah.
like a parent can go to the concert with their child and both know the songs, both know the music, and that takes a like that takes a lot of work from an artist, right? Unless you've been infused with it. Like for instance, like some of my friends, they'll have their kids listen to like Backstreet Boys when they're still in the womb, right? But in this case, it's like my cousin went to the Taylor Swift concert here with her little cousin and her aunt. And they paid about $700 a ticket or whatnot.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and they both went together. They all went and they had their time of their lives. So, and like my cousin's aunt knew the songs, and it's basically both generations know the songs where you don't find that artist
Yeah.
touching diff like different age scopes.
I think you're onto something, Gina. Because now that you said that, and I'm thinking about it, I was like, you know, a mother wouldn't take her child to a Cardi B concert, right? A mother wouldn't take her child to a Glorilla concert. You've made a good point. Maybe the reason why Taylor Swift is able to sell out shows anywhere in the world, and she's able to attract crowds and crowds and crowds, and people are willing to pay any price for a ticket, is because she's what's the best way to put this? Because I'm not saying that women don't have the right to express themselves in any way possible, but you know, a mother would feel comfortable bringing her child, little daughter, to this show. A mother wouldn't feel comfortable at a lot of shows because a lot of times the female performers, you know, and I've said this a lot, like I don't understand how male rappers are allowed to go out on stage in a big coat and jeans, fully clothed, you know, whatever they feel comfortable in. But when a woman, a female rapper comes out, she has to have on pasties and a thong. And it's like, I don't understand why we can't hear women's music and understand and respect women's music regardless of what they're wearing. And I think maybe Taylor Swift is the one that has changed that. Maybe she has really put a stop to women having to wear absolutely nothing on stage in order for people to listen, because men don't have to do that. And I think maybe you're right. I think maybe the reason why she's reached this huge milestone, you know, because whether people want to admit it or not, she's up there with like the Beatles and Madonna. Like the things that she's done and the places that she's performed and the number of tickets and albums that she sold, whether people want to admit it or not, she has set herself up at this table with legendary artists. And a lot of people, like certain generations, the older generations, are like, oh, she's nothing like, you know, the older generations of music, and she could never withstand, you know, what the legendary artists have done. Well, she's done a lot of the same stuff, if not more, you know. So at some point, you have to let her sit at the table.
Like for instance, like if you take for instance, like my cousin's going into grade 9, and she, like it's age appropriate for her to go see Katy Perry and Taylor Swift. She likes Taylor Swift, obviously, because she went, but I don't think she went to go see Katy Perry. But it's still age. I know many parents, well, Katy Perry was here, took their kids to see Katy Perry here. And that's because it's a pop music. There's nothing really, it's a bubblegum pop, basically, as I like to put it. Where, for instance, if Britney Spears was to tour again, like just listening to her some of her lyrics, it's not age appropriate for someone who's in ninth grade or whatnot, a child or a younger child. Like honestly, like oops, I did it again. I'm a slave for you. Like, it's all sexual innuendos, basically, where Taylor Swift, Katy Perry, I'm sure there's more. It's more bubblegum pop. Like, it's more kid friendly. It's more rated G versus rated PG, right? Or rated R. And my cousin had went to the Justin Bieber concert, well, when he was here like years ago, and my cousin was a lot younger, and her mom's just like, and obviously as a little girl, you're gonna have a crush on Justin Bieber. That's gonna be your first crush, basically, depending on what age you grew up in. And she's just like, I kind of regret taking her to the Justin Bieber concert, but she really wanted to go just because of the music. It wasn't age appropriate for her at that time.
Well, Justin goes out on stage and with no shirt on and his pants are around his knees, and it is a little inappropriate for young girls. And I don't know, this is so hard because it's funny, Gina, when I grew up, I was listening to like Keith Sweat and all this, like Idina Howard. Like all this super inappropriate music, like Jodeci, like music that was so beyond my years or whatever. But like now that I'm an adult, I realize that I shouldn't have been listening to that. I know why my mom didn't want me listening to it, but when I was a kid, I didn't get it, right? So when
The
I listened
same.
to Idina Howard, Freak Like Me, like I was, oh my gosh, I was in the car yesterday and I was listening to my oldies because that's what I do. And I was listening to Idina Howard, Freak Like Me, and I was listening to the lyrics and I was like, huh, I probably shouldn't have been listening to this when I was 8. Like I probably should, like when I was listening to the lyrics and I was like, this is not okay. Like even at my age today, this is a bit much, like this is a lot. So yeah, I totally understand that. And I think that moms are in a weird space now, like, because it's like you want to protect your kids from things that are beyond their years that are too advanced for them, but they seep into pop culture, right? Like your child is going to be attracted to what's popular around them, whether it's fashion, music, whatever, shoes, brands, whatever is going on in the world, the children take notice to that due to social media. So it's like parents are put in this weird place where they're like, do I shelter them from music? Do I shelter them from things? Or do I let them experience the things going on in culture? And parents are like put in this weird dilemma, right? Because you want to make sure that your children are protected, but at the same time, you don't want to neglect them or make them feel like they're not allowed to experience things because those kids end up sneaking around or doing things anyway. So it's like I feel bad for the parents for today. I don't, there's no real right answer on what to do, right? Oh, speaking of parents, so I want to get into this Sean Kingston story. So Sean Kingston and his mother, okay? His mother, Gina, her name is Janice Turner. So they were both arrested. I think you know about this last year. In a fraud scheme, which happened somewhere in Florida, somewhere around here. And they basically got a lot, over $1 million in goods that they never purchased. And I think the story was he was telling these people that he was going to be recording music in an album with Justin Bieber. And when that album was released, that's when he would pay them. Right. And Sean Kingston has many, many moons ago, decades ago, worked with Justin Bieber. So he was
Here's
able.
what I read, though. It was from April 20, 2023 to March 2024. He arranged purchases of luxury merchandise. After negotiating deals, he would invite the sellers to his high-end home in Florida and promise the feature them and on like on social media and their products on social media. And when it came down to pay him, he would text fake receipts. Victims contacted. When fund con tried to contact him when funds weren't received, and hence the lawsuit, and the
Oh,
funds weren't
so,
clear.
well, okay. I did hear that he was using Justin Bieber's name, though, but I guess that's not in that particular story. So that we'll say a legend on that, but I did hear that. And so I guess what he received was a bulletproof Cadillac Escalade. A 232-inch LED television, or I'm sorry, 232-inch LED television, which I don't even know how big does your wall need to be to hang that. Luxury watches and other luxury goods. And he got all of this stuff totaling over $1 million, and apparently he never paid anybody anything. And I'm just trying to follow along, Gina. Like, how did he think this was gonna go? Because if someone gives you a Cadillac Escalade, a bulletproof Escalade, first of all, why does it have to be bulletproof? Isn't that like presidential status, like the Queen of England status? Like, you don't need a bulletproof car. Like, I don't even think people are even going to a Sean Kingston show. Who
I was going to
shoots?
say, I'm like, who the heck is going to attempt to shoot you? Like,
People
what?
don't even remember him. Like,
I'm like, dude, I don't know you. Like, nah.
this is insane, right? And the fact, okay, so I don't want to victim blame, but I will say, I would not give or deliver a vehicle to someone without payment. I just wouldn't do that. Like, and I don't care who you are. I don't care if you are on Vanderpump Rules or on Love Island. You would have to pay me at least a down payment before I just hand over goods to you. And these sellers, they did hand over goods to him with no real compensation, just a promise of payment, right? And then they never receive payment. So I will say people definitely need to be a little more careful, with that, because I don't know any car lot that I could walk into and promise them I'm going to pay and drive away in a car. I don't think any car lot would do that. So I think that his level of celebrity or status was used as a fake guarantee. And because they're like, oh, he sent phony wire transfer receipts. And I was like, well, if he sent a wire transfer, the money would show up in your account. So how long did he think that that excuse was going to work? Because if you say you sent me a wire transfer, those come within days. So that only buys you a few days, So I was like, I don't really know what his end game was. So the end game for the feds is 3.5 years in the federal prison for Sean Kingston, which I don't know. Do you think that that's fair? Do you think that he should have got less time, more time? Like, how do you feel on that fraud sentencing?
Well, with the fraud cases, that's normally what happens with people in the public eye. I think Mike, the situation from Jersey Shore, also did 3 to 5 years.
Oh, I remember. Oh my God, Gina, I remember he did do that time. Wasn't it for like tax evasion fraud or something
Yeah,
along the
that
lines
was,
of that?
yes, that's correct.
Oh my
So,
gosh, I forgot about that. I totally forgot. You're 100% right. So, and they made him serve time. So, and do you think that if he wasn't a celebrity that he would have gotten this much time, or do you think that they make celebrities examples? Do you think that they punish them a little harsher because of their celebrity status, or what?
I don't think that they do. I think, like, because probably a normal person who created tax evasion fraud or wire transfer fraud in this case, they would probably go for prison for a lot longer than 3 years.
Oh, so maybe he got off
Yeah.
a little better because of his name.
Yeah.
So, and I think what's really hard for this for me is his mom was involved, and now his mom is going to go to prison,
Yeah,
right?
the news article that I read had said that basically they like invaded his mom's house in Florida in her mansion and arrested her.
Yeah, they said that they were co-conspirators, and it's just so sad, like of all the people in the world, your mom should be the person that steers you in the right direction, not the person who co-conspirates with you to commit what
You know
like
what?
fraud.
Greed and money is
It's the
it
root of
works
all
not
evil. It's the
it's
root
the
of
root of
all evil,
all,
Gina.
yeah.
And unfortunately, because, let's be real, Sean was living in his own mansion. His mom was living in her own mansion. They had everything that they needed. So the idea that they needed anything more, you're right, it's pure greed. Pure greed. And unfortunately, no one is going to be attending any Sean Kingston concerts because Sean Kingston will be sitting the next 3.5 years in the federal prison. And one thing I learned about federal prison is you can't get good behavior release, early release, or appeal your sentences as much as like you could, like in jail or prison. The federal prison, you serve the time that they give you. Because I was having this conversation with someone and I was like, oh, maybe the person can get out for good behavior. And they're like, oh, this is federal prison. That's not a thing. Whatever time they assign you, that's usually exactly what you have to serve. Because, you know, in the regular jail or prison, if you be a good person and you don't go and fight the guards, they might let you out sooner than anticipated. But I heard that that's not a thing when it comes to federal charges. Federal charges are way more serious, and there's none of that slap on the wrist when it comes to federal stuff.
Yeah, no, there is not. It's not a slap on the wrist. And you're not a child, even though when the article that I was reading, allegedly his lawyer was thinking, like, oh, because of his fame at such a young age, he's still like living in an adolescent mind type of thing like that. And the judge is like, no, I don't buy that.
Well, he's 35, you know, so it's hard to use your defense as, oh, he's still a teenager, right? And I think that his fame did come really early. Don't get me wrong. Him and Justin were very young when they were doing music together. But there's been a lot of time that passed since then where he's been out of the public eye for quite a while. And I think that he has had a little bit of time to grow up and understand the way the world works outside of the celebrity aspect of it. Because he hasn't, you know, the last time you heard a Sean Kingston song on the radio, Gina, we're going back decades, okay? So I think that we can safely say that Sean was able to, you know, get a taste of what life is like without being played on the radio 700 times an hour. I think that he's lived, you know, a pretty normal life for the past, let's say, 10 years. Right, compared to what he was doing when he had hit after hit after hit. Because let's be real, and no disrespect to Sean Kingston, Sean Kingston has some amazing music, right? Like, I remember seeing him in concert, I've met him a few times. He seemed like a nice guy, and his music was very good, not just the stuff he did with Justin, but like all of it. Like, I was a big fan, so I'm not gonna tarnish what he has done or whatever. But it's a shame though when we see these big name artists fall, right? Like, we saw it with Diddy. Who else? Somebody recently. Oh, R. Kelly. Like, we see these big, huge name, legendary artists, and they just fall. And it sucks. It sucks to see that. But we learned that the music industry is a chew you up and spit you out industry, right? When you're doing well, everything is well. And then when you're not doing well, there's no one there to help you. There's no backup plan. No one is gonna to bail you out, right? Like, and this is a prime example of no one is there to bail him out. He's frauding people for things, you know. Like, you would think he's made some pretty famous friends along the way. So if he did need some help, you would think there was someone in his phone that he could text and ask for help. But no, nah, he was out on his own, and he decided that that bulletproof Escalade was worth more than his freedom. Unfortunately, and now his freedom is gone.
Yeah, his freedom belongs to the federal government at this point in time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Also, I want to talk about this pilot situation. So, Southwest Airlines, which, oh my God, I just recently flew on. It kind of scares me a bit. So there was a pilot who was, his name was David Alsop. And he was pulled off of his flight that was actually about to take off and given a field sobriety test, which he failed, Gina. And the police said that they could smell alcohol on him shortly before the scheduled flight's takeoff. So, you know, we know about DUIs. Like, we know how it's illegal to drive drunk, but the idea of airplane pilots, it never really crosses your mind to think, like, hey, is this airline pilot under the influence? Because it's not a car, you know? And so this kind of, it hit home for me because I was like, I fly a lot, and you are praying and you're putting every ounce of hope and trust into these two people in the cockpit. And we don't know, because, you know, like, if you get a bunch of DUIs, they'll put that breathalyzer in your car, you know, Gina. So before you can start it, you have to blow into it to make sure that you're able to drive. But a pilot, how do you get, who's going to pull over an airline pilot in the air if they're flying erratically? No one, because there's no air police. So, like, this whole situation was really eye-opening for me because this is just one guy. Right, who happened to get caught, How many pilots do you think are legitimately flying drunk or high? And that's really the real question here, Gina. How safe are we in the air?
I don't know. I don't even want to think about that either because, like, it's one of the, well, not with Southwest, I guess, but airline, like, airplanes is the safest way to fly. Am I going to be like, should now all airlines do a breathalyzer test on each pilot?
Well, that's what I was thinking too, Gina. See, you are so smart. That's where my mind was going. I was like, put that breathalyzer thing that they put in the cars on the plane. So you don't even have to do field sobriety before the plane. You can like start it. Like, say, for instance, starting a plane, let's hypothetically say that's starting the engines. So before the engines will fire up, each pilot, like there's an engine on the left and the right side. So say each one is one and one. Each pilot blows into the breathalyzer thingy. And then that gives it permission to start the engines. You know, like instead of doing field sobriety or doing blood tests, that's going to be expensive. I think the DUI breathalyzer thing might just be it, and just put it on every single airplane. And in order for you to start the plane, you gotta blow into that. But I remember, okay, so let's go back. I'm a huge aviation safety buff, and I watch all of the documentaries on all the planes and disasters and all of the air traffic control, air transportation safety board, anything that has to do with that, I love and I watch. And I remember years and years ago, we're talking more than 10 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, there was a plane crash somewhere in Colorado, I believe. And the plane landed short of the runway. Well, I don't want to say landed, it crashed short of the runway, killing everybody on board. And they did a when oh, so standard procedure, air traffic safety board does a drug, blood, alcohol analysis on the pilots' bodies when they're recovered from the crash site. And the pilot tested positive for cocaine.
Oh, God.
And the pilot was actually high on coke, and he was very, very impaired. So when he was looking out, he was flying based on memory, and he thought that he could see the runway, but it was snowing. And what he was actually seeing was a snow-capped mountain. And he was flying too low. And the plane, smart, the plane is very intelligent. It's a very intelligent piece of equipment. The plane was telling the pilot, you're flying too low. They have a ground proximity warning sensor machine on the plane that says, hey, for where you're going in accordance to where the airport and the runway is, your plane is too low because there's terrain in between. So him being high, he ignored and turned off the ground proximity warnings because he was like, no, I know where I am. I've flown into this airport many times. I know where I am. That's not right. There's no terrain. And they flew directly into the side of the mountain. So that was a very isolated incident, right? Like that, there hasn't been many crashes where pilots were impaired or high or drunk. Like you could count literally on a few fingers how many times that they'd done investigations and found that was the cause. So this was the first time I've heard something like this since then. So now I'm a little worried, Gina, because alcohol is so easy to get. Because Gina, you know, when I go to the airport, the first thing I do when I have a layover or I have extra time, I go have a drink. You
Oh,
know how.
I'm in the lounge. I am drinking
Me
my freaking face off.
too. So it's a
But
very.
not to a point where it's just like you are too drunk to fly. You're too drunk to sit in this seat. Not one of those, because
Well,
I've seen one of those shows. What was it called? And it was like on airplanes and stuff like that, where they would kick off passengers for being inebriated and everything like that. No, not that drunk, just
No,
enough.
just like probably so drunk that I'll fall asleep. Like that.
Exactly. I'm not going to bother you. I'm not going to cause a scene. I was never that met, like, even drinking, like, outside of like of a plane, and I don't need booze to have a good time. Even so, I wasn't even a mean, like, drunk or alcohol. Like, that's the thing. I was like woohoo, like, let's party, like. But not like so bad where, what was that movie called? Where they all go to Vegas and then they get kicked off the plane because she's so hopped up on Bridesmaids. That's what that
Oh,
movie was
Bridesmaids.
called. Yes. So where they get kicked off the plane because what's her face is so drunk and on something like drunk and on she took like an Ativan or something like that. And so yeah,
Well,
not that bad.
here's the thing. Is this going to become an issue where they're going to have to make alcohol a little less accessible in airports? Because, I have seen, look, I'm just going to be real with you. And I'm in airports all the time, and I have seen pilots sitting at bars before. And it
You know
never
what?
crossed
Because
my mind.
I
It
go to the
never.
lounges, so I never, because I might as well pay for the lounge because I get food and booze versus going to a restaurant and ordering food and booze and paying the same price as the lounge where I can get more food and more drinks at the lounge.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing though. If there's it's so accessible and easy to get, and especially in the lounge, because the pilots are allowed in the lounges too, and they it's like unlimited. You can get whatever you want.
Oh,
So
yes.
I'm wondering, is this gonna spark a change in the availability of alcohol in airports? Because pilots are allowed to drink just as much as passengers. So, but at the same time, pilots have a little more responsibility because they have to fly the plane. We just have to sit on it. So, we don't have as much responsibility, and no one's lives are in our hands, so we can have more to drink. But the accessibility of alcohol, I think, is what is in question because, it doesn't take much once you're in the airport to get a drink in your hand, which and it's never struck me as a negative thing until now that this story has taken place. Because the pilot claims that he was drinking the night before, but everyone is saying that they could smell the alcohol on him. It seemed more recent. So I was like, do you think that he was drinking in the airport? Do you think that he was drinking right before he got there? And so I'm wondering if the Safety and Transportation Board is going to start limiting the accessibility of alcohol in the airport, because who's to say he wasn't dressed in his pilot's outfit and he went in and he just got drunk. And then after he drank, he went and changed and got on the flight. Not necessarily. I don't know if anybody would notice. I mean, I know if you're a pilot and you frequent an airport, somebody might recognize you, that as you're a pilot. But at the same time, do people really take that much notice into what people are doing when you're working and you're busy and you have customers, you have other things going on? So I don't know. It's very worrisome, Gina. This is a worrisome.
Well, that's the thing. These restaurants and lounges and whatnot, they also need to take some accountability, right, on whether or not they're serving. Because when I've gone to some of the lounges, the airport lounges, the top shelf, like alcohol, you have to order it from the staff member, right? And they make it for you. And then, same with, but like the wine, for instance, that's like a free for all type of thing like that. But if I honestly saw a pilot drinking wine in a lounge and helping himself to wine or beer, I'd be like, this is wrong. Like, who am I going to call? Like, well, what airline does this pilot work for? Because this is not safe.
This is a new
Like,
fear unlocked. It's a new fear unlocked, Gina. Like I thought I knew all the things I was afraid of. New fear unlocked because now I feel and I do believe that air travel is the safest mode of transportation because I drive regularly and there's so many accidents and so many near misses and situations where I've always almost been in accidents. And in the air, I feel safe. And now I have this new fear that I didn't know that I had. And it's is my pilot inebriated? Because let's be real, when the pilot comes on the little overhead and they start talking, they always sound drunk, don't they? Like when they talk, they always sound like slurred and weird, but I think that's kind of like pilot's jargon. That's kind of how they sound. But like now that I've seen this story, I was like, and this is an isolated incident. He's just one person that got caught. And then it brought me back to that documentary that I watched about that pilot who was high on coke that day and he crashed a plane or whatever. And I was like, so now it's making me think back, like, what if this has been going on this whole time? Just because you know what they say, people get away with everything until they get caught. And there are some people that are high functioning drunks, right? They're high functioning. They can do a lot of the things that they can do sober at drunk. So I was like, who's to say that there aren't pilots flying drunk all the time, but they're high functioning, right? Like they can still do it, because when it comes down to flying a plane, it's very routine. You do the same things. You set the flaps, you put in your coordinates. You know, it's very routine. There's checklists. There's even a computer built into the plane that walks you through each step. So let's say, for instance, you are drunk, but you're a high functioning drunk. You can still complete the steps and the process to satisfy the plane to know that you're flying it correctly. Because if you don't follow the steps in the computer, it will alert someone that you're not following the proper steps, you know, lowering the flaps and all that stuff. But I'm just wondering, have we been in danger this whole time? Like, has there been people like flying planes drunk and high this whole time and just nothing happened? Because at the end of the day, unless something bad happens, we're not going to know what was going on. We'll never hear it.
I don't want to think about that because I'm already thinking about going to Vegas in January. So I really don't want to think about that.
Let's not scare anyone, including ourselves, but I do want to, so we have a little more air traffic stuff to talk about. There's a couple of other air stories, but they don't involve anything scary. Well, this one might be scary. So Spirit Airlines, they're a huge name, low budget airline. They said that they don't think they're going to make it through the end of the year. They said that operating costs, and they filed for bankruptcy, and rising inflation costs and fuel costs has overcome their business model. And their business model is extremely cheap tickets and super expensive bags. So that's kind of their business model. And apparently there's a lot of competition in the airline industry, because there's low budget, low cost, and then there's the general airlines. And one thing that I've noticed is the low budget airlines and the general airlines, they're bridging the gap. So for you to fly Spirit, it's not usually super, super cheaper than flying United. Have you noticed that? Like, Spirit used to be like, you could get on the plane for $40. Now Spirit is like $100, but United might be $200. But a lot of people are like, well, I would rather fly United because I could bring a carry-on and another bag versus Spirit. I have to fly with whatever is on my back. So they're bridging that gap, and now Spirit doesn't think that they're going to make it through the end of the year unless someone decides to buy them. But no one is interested in buying a failing company, Gina. Like, nobody wants to take on someone else's debt. So no one has shown any interest. And they said that if things don't change, they're going to start auctioning off their equipment.
I wonder if Frontier, or I know it's mostly a West Coast carrier in the United States, Allegiant. I know you haven't heard about that that airline, but they even have a stadium in like Vegas called Allegiant Stadium. So, and they're a low budget airline too. So if they're looking to expand, Allegiant is, if they're looking to expand, like Spirit would be the way to go because of the different ports or whatnot that Spirit has.
You're right. They could purchase all of the gates and terminals that Spirit would no longer be using.
Exactly.
And that would make them a more generalized airline, because like you said, they're more so on one side of the country. If they were able to take over Spirit's terminals, you know, Spirit is basically everywhere, that would have way more destinations and airports that they would be flying out of. But I don't know of how they would want to go about that. They would probably want Spirit to completely fold and then buy it out of auction, because it would be
exactly
cheaper.
Super cheap.
You don't want to buy Spirit, because Spirit, you're going to inherit that debt. So I would let them fold and go under. And then once the liquidation process starts, that's when you can get all of the stuff that you need.
Yeah.
It's kind of like unfortunate.
They are expanding. Like, I can see like on Allegiant's website, they have like West Palm Beach, like Washington, D.C., Oklahoma, Ohio, like Tampa Bay, right? So they are slowly expanding like to different like countries, like Sarasota and California and Florida and Illinois and Rochester. So they are expanding, but a lot of, like, in, for instance, I haven't flown Allegiant in years from Bellingham, but from Bellingham, Washington. But like they fly like to from Bellingham, like L Las Vegas, LA, Phoenix, Oakland, Palm Springs, and Phoenix. So it's basically sticking to one portion of like they're not flying from Bellingham to like, let's say, Florida. They're just sticking to a shorter route.
Well, it kind of depends on the type of aircrafts they have. Some aircrafts, the smaller aircrafts, can't carry enough fuel to go cross
Exactly.
country. So they would
Exactly.
have to guarantee that they have an airport that they can connect in to refuel. And so if they're using the smaller aircrafts, that would mean that they have to do short hauls. And, short hauls, that's 2 to 3 hours maximum. They can't fly, and it might actually be 2 hours maximum. I can't remember specifically. That's just all the fuel that they have, and they clearly can't go across an ocean. So that could be too. So if they were to expand, they would have to upgrade their aircrafts to larger aircrafts that have a larger fuel tank, which, sometimes expanding is a double-edged sword. A lot of times expanding is what is the knife in the coffin for a lot of companies. But yeah, Spirit has made its name for I don't want to say made a name for itself because usually it's the butt of every meme or every joke or whatever. But at the end of the day, they did make a name for themselves in the airline industry. And let's be really transparent here. Spirit hasn't had any crashes. So no matter what you say about Spirit and if they're ghetto or if they're, whatever, none of their planes fell out of the sky. And I think that at the end of the day, that's what's important, right? It's not about, who or what or the memes or if they're ghetto. I want that plane to stay in the air until it lands. And Spirit has not had any major accidents that I know of. And I think that's the real test, and they did provide safe air travel. You might be flying with people that fight and scream and get kicked off of planes or whatever, whatever. But at the end of the day, they were a safe airline. And that says a lot, and we're in a world where there's a lot of airlines that have been around for a long time that have had a lot of safety blemishes. Spirit didn't have that. So they did provide what they promised, safe, affordable air travel. And unfortunately, they're not going to make it probably through the end of the year.
Yeah, we'll see what happens if someone like a low budget carrier, once they've filed for bankruptcy, buys it on like pennies on the dollar type of thing like that.
So what's going on in Canada right now? Because we were talking earlier and you said that there's a Air Canada strike. So what does this
Yes.
mean? What does this mean for air travel in Canada? Because, Canada is pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Remote, right? It's pretty remote. If you want to leave Canada or even go from one region of Canada to another region of Canada, you have to do it by aircraft. So
That's correct.
what does this mean for you guys? Because if you want to go from one part of your country to another part of your country, you can't get in the car. Like in America, some people can just drive. You can't do that. So what does this mean?
So, my cousin actually drove from Toronto to Vancouver. Hold on one second. I have a tickle in my throat. Sorry about that. Had to cough. The water went the wrong way. So my cousin drove from Toronto to Vancouver for a teaching job, and it took him about a week to drive,
Oh
if
my
not
God.
longer. Yeah. So that's like going to like, think about it, George. That's from where you live to like Seattle,
Yeah,
right?
it's
That's
not even
one part
a.
of the country to another part of the country on the West
I
Coast.
call it one part of the world to another part of the world because anything more than 3 hours in the car is another part of the world, and I'm not doing it.
So basically, what has happened, and now the government is stepping in, the government of Canada is stepping in with the Air Canada strike. Basically, the flight attendants have gone on strike due to the
So,
fact.
are they being paid low wages? Like, is that the issue?
I'm not sure. I'll figure out their starting wage for the flight attendants. But as you know, with the flight attendants, they only get paid when the door closes on the aircraft. They don't
Oh,
get paid for
yeah.
pre-boarding. They don't get paid for crossing security. It's not like if I was to start my job, like if I go into work, it's not, oh, when I start doing a task, that's when I start getting paid.
But wait, is it that way in the US too?
That I don't know.
Because I know that they get paid for flight hours. I do know that flight hours is when, like you said, when the cabin doors close. That's kind of how pilots get paid too. It's flight hours. When the cabin door closes, wheels up to wheels down is basically your flight hours. I wasn't aware that the flight attendants weren't getting paid because the flight attendants, even before the cabin door is closed, even before we get on the plane, they're on the plane and they're working. They're preparing meal service and drinks and coffee. Like they are definitely working before the cabin doors close. So I didn't realize that they were just sitting unpaid all that time. That doesn't seem fair, to be honest with you. Really, it doesn't seem fair.
No. So that's how it works here. But I kind of figured that the government would intervene because technically they're what's it called? They're kind of an essential service because we don't have as many airlines as, say, for instance, United States does, right? We have Air Canada, we have WestJet, we have Flair, and maybe some tropical destination, Air Transat and Sunwing. Like we have very few like
Oh.
flight
Do
options.
you guys have like a train service that goes throughout the country?
We have a train, but that would take forever to get there too.
Oh, it's not a rapid train, it's just a normal speed. Oh, I see. Wow, I did
Yeah.
not realize that you guys did not have as many transportation options. Because
Yeah, and
you know what's funny?
it's not like it's cheap either, right? Like I can, let's say for instance, if I was to go to, like I went to Europe for Christmas, right? Or some like a summer vacation, I can fly to Toronto for like $600 to $700, maybe between $400 to $600 round trip. And then, but I can fly to Europe just by like $300 or $400 more. So what option am I going to choose? Come on
Oh,
now.
yeah.
Lol.
I don't know. This is, I mean, whenever there's a strike, a lot of people end up suffering, right? Like there's strikes when teachers go on strike, and now there's flight attendants going on strike. And sometimes I've heard of pilots striking. And a lot of times, a lot of people aren't aware of the conditions that people are going through. I think this does bring awareness to different situations. Like you said, I didn't realize that the flight attendants weren't getting paid. Because when before we're allowed to board the plane, the flight attendants have already entered the plane and they've already started working. And the pilots have already boarded the plane too. So the idea that people aren't getting paid, but they're physically at work, right? Like if you're in the airport, you're at work. Gina, like you said, when you go to work, the moment you enter that building and you put your stuff down, you clock in. You don't just go hang out there like this is a fun place to be. No, you're at work. So if you're at the airport and you're not traveling for leisure, you should be clocked in. That just seems fair, right? I'm not saying that they should make $1 million an hour. I don't know the statistics of it, but I think that if you're at the airport, you drove to the airport, you went through TSA, you shouldn't be donating your time, right? Like
Exactly.
you should punch in when you get to the destination that is considered your job. The airport would be considered
So,
your job.
someone on Reddit posted what's called their T4, which is basically what they've earned in the year of 2004 from Air Canada. They made about, I make more than this flight attendant, 35K working full time
Oh.
for 2.5 years of service at the time.
Well, I also want to. I don't know if this is relevant, but so when you're a flight attendant, sometimes you have to spend the night in cities that you don't live in. So I'm wondering if there's other compensation. Like, say, for instance, they have to put you in a hotel. Do you
So
think?
what I've read, and I don't know if this is the case with Air Canada flight attendants, when you are on like a layover, for instance, and you're sleeping or whatever, you get paid for that. But I don't know if that's like it could depend on the flight, like the airline itself.
Oh, well,
So they
that would
make
be.
an average of 30, like I'm looking at on Indeed, they make an average of 28.64 per hour.
Well, that sounds good in hindsight, but it depends on
But
how
after
many hours.
taxes, after everything, and yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it depends on how many hours you're actually working. And, you know, there's a lot of factors. And I know for some people, I've heard people say, oh, being a flight attendant, it's my dream job. And but then I have actually a friend that was a flight attendant that no longer is a flight attendant. And they've told me, no. It's not my dream job. It's definitely not something that, like, from the outside looking in, just like as a pilot, too, though. A lot of pilots, it's their dream to fly a plane, you know, since they were a kid. But when you get into flying a plane, we've been talking about this on the other podcast, how you have to do like 1500 to 2500 hours before you can fly with cargo or people. You know, it takes a lot of time to build that career. And then once you're finally accepted, as a pilot, the starting salary is very low, kind of like when you become a doctor and you do your residency. Your salary is super, super low during your residency. And I don't think a lot of people realize that those doctors are making $59,000 per year during their residency, because their residency is where you test your skills, right? It's just basically proving that you are fit to be a doctor. But at the end, these people are living in poverty, because think about how much their student loans are. First of all, they went through medical school, they graduated, they have their degree, and now they're in their residency, and they're trying to live as well as pay off their medical school bills on $59,000 per year, and they're working 60, 70, 75 hours a week. It's insane. And the idea that we allow this to happen, right? Like the doctor, the person who you put your life in their hands, they are overworked and underpaid. That's a scary thing, Gina. Like, who's to say that you go into the doctor and they're super tired? They've been working for hours and hours and hours. They don't have any money. They can't afford anything, and they misdiagnose you because of they're being overworked and tired, and too many patients working too many hours. And then, you know, what happens to you now, right? You're misdiagnosed. We've had so many stories where people were told, "Oh, there's nothing wrong with you. Go home," and then they died the next day, right?
Exactly, or in the hospital because
Exactly. And it's the
due
same
to
thing.
neglect.
It's the same thing with these flight attendants. And I think a lot of people forget a flight attendant's position is not a service position, it's a safety position. They're on that plane to make sure that if anything happens to go wrong, everyone on that plane will be safe and make it out okay. That's the purpose of a flight attendant. It's not for them to bring you a white wine. That's just the
No.
service aspect of it, because nothing went wrong on your flight. Those flight attendants are trained in CPR. They're trained. They're basically EMTs in the sky, right? Anything that can go wrong, they're going to make sure that they save everybody on that plane, if not as many people as they can. So a lot of people don't realize that. They're like, oh, well, they're just a waiter. No, they're not.
Not
They are so much.
have some respect for these people because like they're people too. They have families too. So it's just upsetting to see that like basically I'm reading the union's website and it says a junior Air Canada flight attendant working for full time 75 credit hours per month currently earns 1,952 per month pre-taxes. With Air Canada's first year catch-up increase of 8%, their earnings would increase by 2,108 per month. Meanwhile, a worker earning federal minimum wage at 1,775 per hour would earn 2,840 per month pre-tax. Air Canada's offer is below minimum wage.
Well, yeah, there are people that work at McDonald's that make more than that. It's we really
Exactly.
have to reevaluate the way we pay people. And I've had this conversation before, because, and look, I respect any sports player, athletes or whatever, but I think it's absurd at times that a doctor, a person who can save your life, makes nowhere near what a basketball player makes. And no offense, because I think all people are talented in their own right, and playing basketball is a talent, because Gina, I can't play. I'm not good at it. So I respect everyone's talents, but I think throwing a ball in a hoop, that's worth $20 million, but saving a life is only worth $250,000. Like, why is there such a weird gap between that? Like, a doctor who can literally extend life, save lives, so they can literally change lives based on what they do and the treatment they give, but they can't ever make as much as a basketball player. A basketball player who, if you were on a plane with a basketball player and you were having a heart attack, that basketball player cannot save you. You will die. No offense, but you will die. They don't know how to fix it. They don't know what's wrong with you. But if luckily you were on a plane with a doctor, they can preserve your life until we land and get you to the hospital. And I was like, why is there such income discrepancies when it comes to certain positions? It's like doctors, nurses, flight attendants, pilots. These are all people that have other people's lives in their hands. And I think they should be compensated for that, right? Like, and don't underpay people that have that type of responsibility. Right? Because you don't ever want an overworked doctor to just be like, you know what? I just don't care. Because a doctor who goes into work with that type of attitude, you're not going to get the best treatment. Your life could be at stake. And I think that for some reason, we value athletes over doctors and pilots and people who can help you. And again, I respect athletes and what they do. It's a talent. But at the end of the day, should we be paying one basketball player $50 million, but one doctor $245,000? No, we shouldn't, right? We shouldn't be doing that. There shouldn't be that type of income discrepancy.
Yeah, it's just very sad of who we value with our, like, an athlete can't do anything for our, like, our lives other than provide entertainment, right? Versus a pilot, a doctor, like, a pilot will take us from point A to B. A bus driver will take us from point A to B. Like, a medical professional will save lives. A nurse will save a life. And yet we're paying like millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars for athletes. I don't
Well,
get
right.
it.
And
Make
then if a nurse or doctor asks for a raise or goes on strike, they're made to feel like they're the bad guy. They're made to feel like they don't have the right to ask for more. And they do. You know, I've never talked to a nurse that told me that they didn't work more hours than they should. Like working 60, 70 hours, you know, it's crazy. But these basketball players, they do a 2 or 3 hour game. And then they get time off and then they get to rest and then they have a whole season off and they only have to go to the gym a few times. Like, we really need to, you know, value and understand, you know, what's important and what's not at the end of the day. And again, I respect everyone and every talent, but I think some talents need to be reevaluated in their worth and their value when it comes to salary. You know, I definitely think that we under value the people in the medical field, especially. But there's certain, like we said, certain service positions too, like pilots and flight attendants and TSA agents. These people are keeping us safe in the air. You know, the TSA agents have to work 24/7. They don't get to take Christmas off. They don't get to take Thanksgiving off because if there's a plane taking off, they need to make sure that everybody on that plane is safe. You know, and I think when it comes to those positions that save lives, we should take that into consideration when determining how much they should make.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Yeah, it's like make it make sense.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. But so hold on, let me look at my topics list here. I think we're coming along to the Sydney Sweeney situation. Now, I know that there was an ad. Okay, so let's go back. American Eagle ad that Sydney Sweeney did, and it said Sydney Sweeney has great genes, but it was JEANS. So it was like a play on words. It had double meaning. So it was saying good genes as in GENES, right? Genes. So a lot of people took that as American Eagle is saying that only people with blonde hair or blue eyes have good genes, which a lot of people are saying that's very non-inclusive for a brand. Now, do you remember? Let's go back a long time, Gina. Do you remember back in the day that Abercrombie and Fitch used to have like shirtless men outside their stores, and they would only have pictures of certain race people on their walls in their stores? And then we found out later that there are lawsuits filed against them for discrimination against people that weren't white.
Yes, there's actually a documentary on it
Yeah.
on Netflix.
Yeah, so that was like in the 90s, Gina. So I thought that we were past this. I thought that we were past the idea that these brands thought that they could determine who looks best in their clothes. 'Cause I was like, after the Abercrombie and Fitch debacle, where they felt like their brand was just for white people, right? J or just for a certain type of people, and they got in trouble. And then it wasn't just their brand. They didn't like to hire people either that
Of
didn't look
color,
of color.
or
Yeah, and
didn't look like what their cookie cutter, what they wanted as a cookie
exactly.
cutter.
So this ad, this American Eagle ad, people are saying is bringing us back to the 90s, back to that situation. Do you agree? Do you feel like this ad is making it seem like they want people with blonde hair and blue eyes to wear their brand? Do you feel like that's what you got from that?
Yeah, because what they could have done is made it non-exclusive to blonde hair, blue eyes, right? Type of thing. They could have added women of color and then
Oh, I see.
made.
Yeah, like so they could have gotten, say, for instance, Zendaya, Sydney Sweeney, and then maybe someone with Eastern European descent, and then they all did the ad together, and then at the end they
Exactly.
could all say in unison, "We have good genes."
Exactly. See, I'm like the marketing genius. We're what, like underpaid marketing
You definitely
genius.
should be in marketing because you could have save them a lot of negative backlash just with your easy, quick thinking.
Like,
And
get
I
someone of
actually
like Asian descent, of like, you know what I'm like, I just thought about this. You know how, remember the old brand, and it could be still popular in Europe, United Colors of Benton?
Oh, I'd never heard of that.
Yeah, they're not controversial at all in regards of their marketing and their ad placements and stuff like that, because they had people of different origins, like, and different racial features and whatnot. They had women of color, men of color on their ads
Well, I think
representing
that
them. So they should have done the same thing and then altogether be like, we have good genes or whatnot, and continued with the publication. But when you have someone who's blonde hair and blue eyes, like, obviously you're going to get some criticism with it.
well, here's I, okay, so I think that the good genes play on word was a good idea. But I think what you're right though, when you make it exclusive to one actress and this actress happens to have blonde hair and blue eyes, and again, you're supposed to have marketing, what do you call it, quality assurance people that go over things to make sure that things are ready for market. Somebody should have caught this before it was released. And I think a lot of times the things that get released, it makes you wonder because back in the day there was a job called proofreading. Like it was just your job to go over other people's information and make sure that it's ready to be released. And I think that position has become obsolete, and I think that's a huge mistake in this day and age. I think that there always needs to be someone objective looking over information to make sure that it's ready to be released to the market. And that person is looking for anything that might be considered unexclusive
Taboo,
or
or yeah, I just
and
sent you the pictures of the print ads for the United Colors of Benton, so you can kind of see what I was going with, because they're inexclusive. Like, they weren't just catering, they're catering to everybody of color.
oh, yeah, I see it. Yeah, see, this is an amazing marketing campaign, and I think that when you limit yourself, because look, I'm a business person. So if I ever thought of starting a company, I don't ever want to make anyone feel that I don't want their money. So, okay, remember back when Victoria's Secret got in trouble because they didn't sell anything bigger than small, medium, and large. They weren't selling anything for women that couldn't fit into a small, medium, or large. Because, you know, there's people come in all different shapes and sizes. And sometimes a large is not big enough, or sometimes, you know, whatever the situation is, women felt like Victoria's Secret wasn't catering to everyone. And when I look at marketing and at a business, I want everybody's money, right? Like if I'm starting a company, I'm not going to discriminate in any way. If you want to give me your money for my product or service, I am interested in your money. And I think a lot of companies today, they definitely limit themselves. They're like, oh, well, we're going to make this specifically for this person or this type of person or this race or this size or and why are people closed-minded when it comes to marketing? It'll never make sense to me because as a business person, the only thing I think of is profit and demographic, right? And I think when you're opening a business or you start a business, your demographic is very important. You want to make sure that you're catering to a larger demographic. You can't just cater to men or just women or just children or just, you want to open that up to as many people as possible because that's going to make you more successful. Kind of like Taylor Swift, like we were talking about earlier in the podcast. She's opened up her demographic to everybody. There's little girls, there's adult women, there's mothers, there's grandmothers. The gay community loves Taylor Swift, right? So she's made it to where I don't care who you are. I don't care what you look like. I don't care your gender. I don't care your orientation. You can wear my clothes. You can listen to my music. You can go to my shows. And I think she's really embodied what I think marketing really should look like. Make it to where somebody from every background, every situation can relate to your product in some way. And sell it to them. And I think that she's a master businesswoman, right? Because there's nobody that feels that she's not for them, right? Taylor Swift has, she has a fan in every type of gender, race, country, demographic, age group, and she's made that happen. So I think that when it comes to American Eagle, you know, they should definitely think more. Everyone. And Lizzo was leading this before when her music was big. She was really challenging a lot of magazines and clothing companies and stuff and saying, look, everybody wants to feel beautiful in your product. So why don't you make it to where they can feel beautiful in your product, regardless of what they look like or how much they weigh or what size they are, you should let them feel beautiful in that product. And you know, beauty is subjective. You can't tell people what beauty looks like. You can't tell people what size they should be to be beautiful or to look good. And I think a lot of these companies, they're forgetting the golden rule of everybody's money is green and you should want it, right? Like you're forgetting that golden rule when it comes to marketing is if someone weighs 40 pounds or 400 pounds, their money is green and you should want their money. Like that's how you, that's the longevity of these companies that understand it. They know that if somebody wants to spend money on in your company, you should want to take it and you should make it to where they feel like they're welcomed, right? They're not being left out of your brand.
Yeah, or ex like you're, it's not exclusive. Like there's a store here called Aritzia. I think they have a few locations, like they have locations in the States as well. And I remember my cousin coming here from Germany. I'm like, oh, do you want to see something funny? And I'm like, oh, you like there's an extra, extra, extra small. He's just like, wait, how many X small, like how many X's before the S? And I'm like, oh, they're like three or four, you know. And he's like, who, what? And I'm like, he couldn't even believe it. He didn't believe me. And I took him to the store. I'm like, see, look. And he's just like, oh my gosh.
Well, that's a huge example. It's like make it for everybody, even if you don't even think that person exists or that size exists. Make it so everybody feels ex included. Don't exclude anyone. And I think, like I said, if I ever started a business, I'm gonna make it to where everybody, anyone, any demographic, any size, any race, everybody can do it and participate. And I think limiting yourself to one demographic or whatever, it's crazy. Because if you notice now, there are men that are wearing Victoria's Secret stuff, pink, because for a while they were like, oh, it's an exclusive, just women can wear Victoria's Secret. So now I notice that when you go into a Victoria's Secret store, there's male employees now and they're wearing the clothes. And that's so genius, because who's to, you know, men identify in different ways and they want to express themselves in different ways now. And I think the best way to accommodate that instead of being judgmental is make something for them to buy. Right? Like there's a better place in the market for you to condemn people than just sell stuff to them. Right? Like at the end of the day, does it matter if a man or woman buys your product? The money is going in your pocket. And I think it's the sooner companies realize that you're not here to judge people, you're here to make money, they'll start to be smarter and increasing their revenue and their profits. Like, for instance, there are certain companies who are known for just being judgmental. I think Chick-fil-A falls into that category. Sometimes, like, they don't know how to mind their business when it comes to other people's personal preferences, you know, and I think it's smarter for you to just mind your business and collect your money at the end of the day. Like, and Victoria's Secret did it, because at first they were only selling clothes for only a certain type of people or a certain size of people. And now they're like, hey, if you're a man and you want to wear our products, we'll supply it for you. Like, they definitely learned their lesson, right? They learned their lesson and they learned that excluding people is the wrong way to go. And I think American Eagle has to prove that they learned their lesson from this. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, I still like their brand, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, American Eagle is an iconic brand. It's been around for many, many decades. And I used to wear it when I was younger, and it is what it is. But, you know, they do have to prove to their market now that they don't think that just blonde hair, blue eyed people should be wearing it. You know, now they need to show that's not what we really meant. And at the end of the day, Gina, do you think that's what they really meant? Or do you think that somebody just dropped the ball and they didn't make sure that they proofread this ad before it got released?
I think they didn't went into it with like a blind eye, basically. Like, oh, like, we don't find this offensive at all, right? If you had someone of color sitting on that marketing table and was like, that doesn't sit well, right? But then at the same time, if you're getting paid the big bucks, you're going to sit down and shut up, right? Because your opinion does not matter. It's already set to print. So I just think it was like Pepsi did the same thing with Kylie Jenner.
Which ad was that? I'm not familiar.
It was the Pepsi Cola ad that she did. There was a huge controversy on it like years ago.
Oh.
But like almost the same thing. So basically, like, there's a lot of backlash with a lot of these companies once they get put under a microscope. That's when they start hiring people of color to get basically a social media background on like how offensive this could be. Like, they just start doing the right things after, but too little too late.
Yeah, you're right. It's too late. And I think you're right. I think that every company should look into hiring a team of people that goes over marketing and ads and things that companies are doing to check for offensive terms or just racial undertones. Like, there should be a team of people, like a monitoring team, where everything goes through them. And they're like, we're going to make sure that whoever is looking at this ad or viewing this ad or watching this ad, that it doesn't offend them in any way. And I can't remember. It might be an ethics team. I can't remember what they call it.
But yeah.
It's a team of people that kind of go in and make sure that this is going to be approved and not offensive to anyone of any background before you go out and release it. And a lot of companies should, you know, invest in doing something like that. You should have a team of people.
Sorry, I said it was Kylie Jenner. It was Kendall. Kendall Jenner in the Pepsi
Kendall.
Cola. Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember the ad specifically, but I think, like you said, Gina, a lot of times these companies, they don't realize it, and there's no one monitoring and going over and proofreading it before it's released to market. And then, like you said, it's too little too late now. You missed it. and now you've offended people, and now it's important that you have to fix it. But at the end of the day, I think that there should be a team of people who come from all different backgrounds, right? Different races, different parts of the country, so they can give their expertise. Because remember when Hoda, no, not it wasn't Hoda, it was the girl on Love Island, Sierra. She used a horrible racial slur about a certain cultural background of people, and
An
she was like,
Asian descent,
yeah, of Asian descent.
basically.
And if we had someone of Asian descent, every different descent on a team of people, and they can go and they could go over these ads and the terms that we use and the way that we're using words and verbiage, they would be able to tell you. They're like, hey, well, in my culture, that's offensive, right? And if we had that type of people going over these ads and these things, because Sierra said that she didn't think that was a negative term. And
But all you have to do is Google it too.
I
There's
mean, you're
no,
right. You're right.
like,
You're 100% right. But it's funny, Gina, I knew that that was a negative term just from hearing it. I knew immediately that's not something that I would use publicly. That term is offensive. It's degrading, and it's offensive. And it's weird that in this day and age that people are using offensive terms and claiming they don't know they're offensive. Like, Gina,
no,
you would
please,
know
please.
that the term that Sierra used from Love Island was offensive. Anybody would know that. Like, come on now.
Yes, like we're in this world with like we're in this world and it's so culturally diverse. I'm not even going to use the word, right, for someone who is of Hispanic origins, right? Because, but there are some slurs that you can use to describe them because I ain't going to say that because it might haunt me in the butt after. But I'm not going to call somebody that. But I know the word,
Well, right.
right?
We know these words, but we also know that you shouldn't be using them. And
Exactly.
I think that you got to be really careful nowadays, because like when we were younger, we could get away with so much, right? We could say things that were offensive. We could do things that were offensive. People didn't cry and get offended as much as they do now back then. So now you
Well,
have to be
people weren't snowflakes, right? But
right.
I'm still
People.
respectful. Like I remember, getting into my friend's car. We'd be going to the club. We'll be like blaring the music and stuff like that. But never, like, no racial slurs would come out of my mouth, even for a rap song. And if they were talking about racial slurs, but they can because it's a song, right? And they're producing it, they're publicizing it, right? But for me personally, it just was uncomfortable and I would blank out the word and sing the rest of the music, right? But I would never, like, it's not in my vocabulary to use it.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, I forgot to mention. So Sydney Sweeney put out a movie called Americana right after this ad and the controversy. And people are saying that the movie bombed. It made $500,000 at the box office, which, $500,000 is pretty low in comparison to a lot of other movies that come out at the box office. And it opened in 1,100 theaters. And a lot of people are saying, oh, this is directly related to her controversy. And it could be, the movie in itself was considered an indie film though. Like it wasn't a high-end theatrical release. So an indie film is something that was made on a lower budget compared to, like, say, for instance, what was that big movie? Superman. That was made on a higher budget. It's a high-end theatrical release. This movie was considered an indie film, which had a lower budget. It was on a lower scale. But people are saying, oh, well, this was a bomb because it didn't make very much money. But again, this wasn't a high-end theatrical release. But people are saying, even being with a big name like Sydney Sweeney, because remember, Sydney Sweeney's a big name, right? Like, she's done Euphoria. She's done a lot of other movies. She's very well known. She was, before this, a very high-end actress, right? Like, it would cost you to get her in your film. Now, I don't know how things are going to go, right? Like, I don't know how things are going to go because people feel a certain type of way about her. And another thing that people are upset about is they feel that she hasn't responded throughout any of this controversy. Like, she hasn't said, I'm sorry, or she hasn't said, I didn't mean anything by it. She hasn't said anything at all. And I think.
It's only showing at three theaters nearby me, and only I'm looking at this seat map for each of these theaters, and there's like it's basically empty, like full. Like there's basically no one watching it except for like five people.
Oh.
Yeah,
See,
five people.
I think her silence is deadly because when someone is saying that you did something horrible or racist or intolerant and you don't say anything at all, because I don't know that she meant anything by this, right? I don't know that American Eagle meant anything by this. I don't think that they would put out an ad that would tank their company. I don't think that they would in good conscience do that. I think, like you said, they made a horrible mistake and they made a bad judgment. But I think her not saying anything at all, like, I think it would be helpful for her to say, guys, we definitely didn't mean that by it.
But where's her PR? Where's her PR firm stepping up for her, telling her what to say, basically?
Well,
Because you have
maybe
to
her
remember, a lot
PR.
of these people are monkey, like they're like monkeys, monkey see,
Well,
monkey do, right? So, like, where's her PR firm to step in?
you have to know when it's time to apologize or speak out. And I think that her silence is making it seem like that is how I meant it. And I don't think that her silence means that, but you not saying anything, it makes it seem like you aren't sorry. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I feel like maybe she should say something. You know, and again, I don't think that her intentions were ever to put out a racist ad or offensive ad. But at the end of the day, if you made a bad judgment call or if the ad was in bad taste or bad judgment after the fact, it's helpful for you to say, hey, when I was presented this idea, I didn't feel that that was where the direction this idea was going in. I didn't feel that way. I would have never done it if I thought this was the direction it was going. She doesn't have to admit guilt, but she could also explain herself a little bit. You know, say, well, yes, I was involved in this ad, but I did not feel that it was offensive at the time. Now that it's come out and people have, you know, seen it and it's been shown in a different perspective or a different light. Now I just want to make sure that people are aware that was never my intention. You know, she doesn't have to admit guilt or say that she did anything wrong, but she could also say, I definitely don't mean to offend anyone. But I think her being silent is not helping either.
No, you need to take accountability like for your paid actions, right? And that's the thing. You're paid to do a job. You did it. But at the same time, if your views don't align, just be like, and like, because I'm sure she got like a printout or a layout of what was going to be on the ad, what was going to be said on the ad. And at that point in time, she could have just declined it. She wouldn't have might have had to pay money for breaking the contract. But at the end of the day, you're the bigger person. Money is money. You can earn money, no problem. But like, it's a moral compass, and clearly, you don't have it.
Yeah, I think her silence is deadly and she should definitely speak out. Okay, so I just want to bring up before we end, the Love Island reunion has been recorded and it'll be airing, I think, Gina, you said on the 24th, right?
25th.
Oh, the 25th. So I'm really, really excited. I can't wait. You know, Gina and I will be watching, we'll be tweeting and live tweeting and everything, but we're going to do a recap after it's over. To discuss everything that happened at the Love Island reunion. There's going to be some craziness, and we've heard rumors that people didn't show up. There's like a lot of things to discuss. So we're really excited to finally get a little follow-up on what,
Closure.
yeah, some closure, right, from Love Island, because it ended well over a month ago. It ended, I think, on the 14th of July. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting for this reunion. It's finally been filmed. We saw the cast members arriving in New York for the filming. So I know everyone is just as excited as we are. So don't worry, Gina and I will be covering it. We'll be talking about it. We'll live tweet it and we'll do a live, not a live recap, but we'll record a podcast recap afterwards so we can discuss our reactions to what was discussed at the tell-all. I keep calling it a tell-all, but it's a
Oh, I
reunion.
know. Union. So
Reunion.
what are you gonna do? Because we have the like there's the Hunt for Love tell all on the same day. What are you gonna watch?
Wait, is it the same day at the same time?
I think so.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, so we'll probably be doing the Love Island. We'll be watching Love Island because honestly, Hunt for Love can wait. So yeah, I'm gonna commit to Love Island. I want to watch it live because remember what happened with me on the finale with Love Island? I accidentally went on Instagram and somebody fast forwarded through on Peacock and I knew who won. So I can't risk it because at the end of the day, no one is going to ruin Hunt for Love for me, but someone will ruin Love Island for me. So
Exactly. And
I
the thing
have to.
is, there's two parts for the tell all for Hunt for Love, anyways, right? So
Right.
there's a like what you can always go back to it, right? But
Yeah.
like love, like that's why I'm like, oh, which like I know
Yeah.
which one I was going to watch, and
No,
I
I have to
chose.
prioritize because at the end of the day, Love Island is going to get ruined. It's going to be all over the internet and all over social media. So I cannot risk missing, the show live and then I end up it gets ruined for me and then I can't actually react to it normally because they took that away from me for the finale. I knew who won. Like
But who's at fault with that?
I only opened Instagram because I got a notification on something. So I opened it. And then after I responded to the notification, I accidentally went into my timeline. It's a force of habit. And
I get that. But, like, yes, whoever posted it is evil, but also, you should have known better at the same time.
yeah, I take some responsibility in that. I should have known to stay off of social media. But I didn't realize that people were able to fast forward to the end to see who won. It never crossed my mind because it is a streaming show. I didn't realize it. So yeah, but I take
Okay.
some responsibility. You got to stay off of social media when you're watching these type of shows, especially if you don't want to know until the end, which I didn't, but
And
yeah.
especially if it's a streaming show, right?
Yeah,
So.
because on live TV, that's not a real issue because you can't fast forward it. So I didn't use my best judgment. So I do take some responsibility in that. But yeah, we'll be watching that, guys. So we're excited. We're ready. It's happening. And then we'll be discussing that as well. So that's it for this episode of the Pop Culture Podcast. This is episode 4 of season 2. Thank you to Gina for joining me, and we will be back soon because Love Island is coming, and then we'll have some more pop culture topics to discuss with you guys as well. So thank you
The
for
Love Island game
listening.
starts in September.
Oh yeah, Love Island Games, which I'm going to be watching with Gina. So we'll be discussing that with you guys as well. And Gina also watched last season of Love Island, so she'll have a little more insight. I haven't gotten last season watched yet, but Gina will have way more insight than me. So we'll be able to talk about some of last season as well. So hopefully I'll be able to be filled in by then as well. But yeah.
And you need to watch that Fit for TV documentary on Netflix as well.
Yeah, I saw a preview for it. And it did look really interesting because the guy from The Biggest Loser who won the show, apparently he gained all the way back. So yeah, I
Yeah.
definitely want to watch that too. So we'll probably watch, well, Gina already did, but whenever I watch it, we'll probably do a little recap on that too, because those weight loss shows were a huge thing back in the day. So this is kind of revisiting, the people who were left behind after those shows stopped being a big deal. So we'll talk about that
It's
too.
only three episodes. It's only like three episodes, so it you can
Oh
do it in a
yeah,
sitting.
I can do that in one sitting, like so yeah,
Yeah.
we should be catching up and then we'll do like a little special podcast episode for that. But thank you guys for listening. Thank you for joining me, Gina, and we will be talking to you guys really soon.
Night, guys. Goodbye.
Bye.